Dear friends, it is a pleasure to be with you again, and I propose we continue our study of chapter 15 of the book of Revelation. We know that it refers to the time of the plagues, that period of time between the end of the judgment of the house of God, when each one has chosen his camp, when everyone has matured either for good or for evil, just before Jesus' return. We have seen that God's people at that time has a voice sounding like the voice of harp players, and they sing a new song. They sing before the throne of God. They sing praises to God. We have also seen that they sing the Son of Moses, but we are also told in verse 3 that they sing the Son of the Lamb. Now, let me invite you to read this text in Revelation 15, verse 4. Who shall not fear you, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you alone are holy. For all nations shall come and worship before you, for your judgments have been manifested. God's people, at that time, has a very clear vision of the plan of salvation. In chapter 15, verse 3, it is said, "Just and true are your ways." In chapter 16, verse 7, we have the statement of the angels saying almost the same thing. Let's read it together. Revelation 16, verse 7. And I heard another from the altar saying, "Even so, Lord God Almighty, true and righteous are your judgments." Is there any difference between just and true are your ways and true and righteous are your judgments? The ways are what is before us, so the 144,000 recognize beforehand that God's judgments are just. They have this far-off perspective of the future to the point that they call Jesus the King of the nations. They know that although men have apparently domination over the earth today, He, Jesus, the King of the nations, is the one who rules the world. And they quote the statement from the book of Jeremiah, chapter 10, verse 7. Who would not fear you, O King of the nations? For this is your rightful due. For among all the wise men of the nations and in all their kingdoms, there is none like you. They therefore quote these words and add something else in verse 14. Let's read Revelation 15, verse 4. For you alone are holy. For all nations shall come and worship before you, for your judgment have been manifested. They know in advance something that will take place only at the end of the 1,000 years, that is, 1,000 years after the return of Jesus. Listen to what they say. All nations shall come and worship you. What is the reason for this general worship? It is because God's judgment have been revealed. In other words, all nations, the elected as well as the reprobates, will come and bow down at God's feet. Surprising as it may seem to us, this is what we shall see through three texts of the Old Testament. I invite you to read first from Psalm 22, verses 29 or 30, depending on the versions. Psalm 22, verses 29 or 30. All the prosperous of the earth shall eat and worship. All those who go down to the dust shall bow before him, even he who cannot keep himself alive. Even those who cannot keep their lives, the reprobates, those who will be destroyed, they all kneel before God. Now, I would like to read a second text found in the book of Isaiah, chapter 45, verses 24 and 25. He shall say, surely in the Lord I have righteousness and strength. To him men shall come, and all shall be ashamed who are incensed against him. In the Lord all the descendants of Israel shall be justified and shall glory. All those who were incensed against God, all those who have animosity against God, those who do not understand God, they all will come and recognize that they were wrong, while all those they once accused will then be justified at that very moment. All will come and bow down before God. Perhaps the last text I am going to draw your attention to is even more convincing. It is still in the book of Isaiah, chapter 65, verse 12. Therefore, I will number you for the sword, and you shall all bow down to the slaughter. Because when I called, you did not answer. When I spoke, you didn't hear, but did evil before my eyes, and chose that in which I do not delight. Here, we see those who are about to die, bowing before God. The text tells us, you shall all bow down to the slaughter. In other words, the enemies of God at the very end shall bow down, shall beg God to cause them to disappear. You see, we can understand the disappearance, the final death, the lake of fire and brimstone as the utmost punishment God will exercise. But here, things are presented differently. God will answer the last request of those who have been his enemies. Considering their situation, their state, the choice they made, they themselves asked God to die. They are almost in the same situation as Judas, who, facing the enormity of his error, his fault, his sin, could no longer bear himself. He could have gone at the foot of the cross and asked for forgiveness, and Jesus would have forgiven him. But it was he who could not forgive himself, and he committed suicide. Well, this is the last grace, the last favor God will grant them, make them disappear. Now let me suggest you read again chapter 15 and consider the profound knowledge of God's plan of salvation His children have already grasped in advance. God's ways are clear to them. They know that everyone will come and worship at God's feet and acknowledge the validity of His judgments. Now I invite you to read with me what comes next in chapter 15, verse 5. After these things, I looked, and behold, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was opened. The temple of the tabernacle of the testimony. The tabernacle is probably the ark containing the testimony. But what does the testimony mean? In the Old Testament, the Word of God calls testimony the two tablets of stone God had engraved with His own finger. Let's read it in the book of Exodus, chapter 25, verses 16 to 21. And you shall put into the ark the testimony which I will give you. You shall make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, and 1.5 cubits its width. And you shall make 2 cherubim of gold. Of hammered work you shall make them at the 2 ends of the mercy seat. Make 1 cherub at the end, and the other cherub at the other end. You shall make the cherubim at the 2 ends of it 1 piece with the mercy seat. And the cherubim shall stretch out their wings above, covering the mercy seat with their wings, and they shall face one another. The faces of the cherubim shall be toward the mercy seat. You shall put the mercy seat on the top of the ark, and in the ark you shall put the testimony that I will give you. Verse 22, and there I will meet with you, and I will speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the 2 cherubim which are on the ark of the testimony, about everything which I will give you in commandment to the children of Israel. And a little further, still in the book of Exodus, chapter 31, verse 18, we read, and when he had made an end of speaking with him on Mount Sinai, he gave Moses 2 tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone written with the finger of God. Now, I'd like to bring our discussion to another aspect of what is taking place here. Precisely, the fact that the tabernacle is opened. Originally, there was a veil of separation between the holy place and the most holy place. Now that the temple is open, the holy place and the most holy place can communicate. And the veil between them represented Jesus Himself. Let's read and establish the parallel with Revelation 11, verse 19, at the time of the 7th trumpet, when the temple is open. Revelation 11, 19. Then the temple of God was opened in heaven, and the ark of His covenant was seen in His temple, and there were lightnings, noises, thunderings, and earthquake, and great hail. The same events are those when the law was given on Mount Sinai. Now, let's look at this veil of separation between the holy place and the most holy place. The veil is miraculously torn down at the very moment of Jesus' death. Look at what Matthew says in his Gospel, chapter 27, verse 51. Then, behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth quaked, and the rocks were split, and the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. Thus, when Jesus expired on the cross, the veil was torn. And when Jesus breathed his last breath, the service in the temple was completed. The last sacrifice was consumed. It was the end of the service in the earthly sanctuary. Well, it's the same with the heavenly sanctuary. When the veil is torn, the service is completed. Thus, man stands directly before the law. Jesus, who was represented by the veil, who was this mediation between the church, represented by the candlestick in the holy place, and the Ark of Covenant, the law and the cloud that was in the most holy and which represented God, Jesus, who was the mediator between the two, no longer officiates as mediator. Man stands directly in the presence of God. And at that moment, at that very moment, the law of God acts without restriction. There is no longer a mediator. During the time of the bulls, men will live without mediator before God, but not unrelated to Christ. He follows the Lamb wherever he goes. And it is because he follows the Lamb wherever he goes that he can live without a mediator. But he sins no more. There is no mediation anymore. We'll have the opportunity to talk about these things later. Now, I'd like to read again what follows in the text in chapter 15, verse 6. Revelation 15, verse 6. And out of the temple came the seven angels, having the seven plagues, clothed in pure bright linen, having their chest girded with golden bands. It is rare to find belts around the chest. Perhaps allusion is made here to the breastplate Jesus, in the opening chapter, chapter 1, verse 13, already wore a golden belt on the chest. Let's read together what we are told about the breastplate worn by the high priest when he ministered in the earthly sanctuary. Exodus chapter 28, verse 29. So, Aaron shall bear the names of the sons of Israel on the breastplate of judgment over his heart when he goes into the holy place as a memorial before the Lord continually. For the high priest to wear this breastplate with 12 precious stones on which were engraved the names of each of the 12 tribes of Israel emphasized the fact that he was bearing on him, in his heart, as the text says, all the people. When Jesus appears in chapter 1 of Revelation, he presents himself as the high priest who bears all his people in his heart. Well, here, the angels that go out to pour the bowls of the wrath of God come out, in fact, to defend God's people. It is because they bear in their hearts God's people, that is, their interest for God's people, that they intervene. The people of God is apparently in dire straits in the eyes of men. And thanks to this intervention of these angels through the bowls, they are delivered. Let's move forward a little more and let's read verse 7. Then one of the four living creatures gave to the seven angels seven golden bowls full of the wrath of God who lives forever and ever. The involvement of one of the four living beings is certainly an indication that these living beings are also involved in the adhesion to move to the next step. We have seen the support of the 24 elders, of the angels, and now we see that of the living beings. They give to the seven angels golden balls. We have already seen the golden balls. The elders carried golden balls for the service, and they offered burnt incenses that are the prayers of the saints. Babylon also carried golden balls. They were certainly not prayers, but abominations. Well, now, those of God contain answers to the two previous ones. In fact, it is for God to take the bowl from one and give it to another. This is what the prophet Isaiah says in chapter 51, verses 22 and 23. Thus says your Lord, the Lord and your God, who pleads the cause of his people. See, I have taken out of your hand the cup of trembling, the dregs of the cup of my fury. You shall no longer drink it, but I will put it into the hand of those who afflict you, who have said to you, lie down, that we may walk over you. And you have laid your body like the ground and as the streets for those who walk over. God turns against themselves the bad projects the enemies of God formed against his people. So at that point, those who previously have been keeping the commandments of God will have no trouble living without a mediator. Whereas those who, on the contrary, have driven themselves into evil, how will they stand in the very presence of God himself? May God prepare us for that time. He is willing to do it, and he shall do it.